Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man.
Hey guys, today we've got a super interesting guest who you may have seen either on Instagram or in other sort of crazy social media accounts when looking at a ton of scantily clad women. This guy has some major Dan Bilzerian vibes and is actually a good friend of his who parties with him very often. He's a international playboy and man of mystery, and that is Michael Sartain. And he's going to be talking with us about status, why it's so important, and how you can become a man of high status. Hope you enjoy this content-packed episode.
How'd you kind of become, you know, Michael Sartain? Tell us your story, man.
So I grew up in East Dallas, and I had a weird upbringing. Not weird, this is kind of a dynamic upbringing where we lived in a decent neighborhood. We lived in a nice, safe neighborhood. But I went to high school south of the train tracks at Woodrow Wilson, and it was not nice. It was a really, really bad neighborhood. Like, so bad that my parents didn't believe me. The stuff about the metal detectors, there were shootings there every year. Several friends go to jail. Like, I have friends in jail to this day from selling crack that I went to high school with, played football with. And it was just, just one of these upbringings where I kind of sat, like, I would go to this Baptist church and you wouldn't see a single Black or Mexican person in the whole church. And then I go to school and I wouldn't see a single white person the whole day. And it was just like, I'm right on the cusp. If you've ever been to Dallas, Dallas is a very segregated city. There's north of Swiss Avenue and south of Swiss Avenue. And I live north of South Swiss Avenue, and I went to high school south of Swiss Avenue. So it was a strange upbringing. And then when I went to college, when I went to UT Austin, I was, you know, UT Austin is almost, there's very few minorities that actually go there. So I ended up joining a Black fraternity because I was just used to being around all the football players on my high school football team. It wasn't any kind of like political thing. I just was used to the company of Black and Mexican people from high school, and there weren't any in college. So I joined this Black fraternity, this Christian fraternity, and I was with them for a while. And then when I joined the military was cool because it's a lot of diversity. It was a lot of things that I was used to in a lot of different places. So I graduated in 2000. So 22 years ago from UT Austin with a bachelor's in management information systems. And I studied some astronomy. When I get out, there is MCI WorldCom and what's it called? Enron go out of business. And so because I have an MIT degree from University of Texas at Austin, or MIS degree, sorry, from UT Austin, that most of our placement went to Enron or subsidiaries of Enron. And so because of that, a chain reaction of people got fired. And so I was going to go work at GameStop, ironically. And then after that, GameStop was like, no, we aren't even hiring people because we were looking at like an economic downturn. And then after that, I was the head door guy at this nightclub, and I was making good money. Actually, I could have just kept doing that. It was just really sweaty work, pushing kegs around and getting in fights and stuff like that. And in Austin, Texas. And then this girl, I remember she's this gorgeous, like, have you ever seen a woman who has like icy blue eyes? Like not even just normal blue eyes. Like if you ever look at like Skylar Walling or something like that, just incredible. Or the nurse Mary, if you guys look her up. This girl had like icy, and she was our bartender. And she told me, she's like, hey, yeah, I'm getting a PhD in forensic pathology from John Jay University. But in order to pay for it, I'm stripping at Exposé. And stripping back in the 90s and early 2000s, remember, there's no social media. Strip clubs had the hottest girls you've ever seen. People don't remember that Hooters used to. People don't remember that Hooters used to have the prettiest girls in the world. Hooters was insane. But then once bottle service happened and strip clubs started taking off, then Hooters, now you go to Hooters and you see a bunch of sea creatures. Like it's completely different, right? And that's the way strip clubs were. If you go to strip clubs now, they're good, but they're nothing. Like if you went to a strip club in 1998, you would see legit playmates in there dancing. Like it was crazy what you would see back then. And they weren't even like feature dancers. The world was very different back then. And so I ended up working at Exposé for 4 years. Here's the funny thing. It's super ironic. When I was in the military, I saw this show, VH1's The Pickup Artist. You remember that show? Right. Okay. So Mystery, who's a friend of mine now, do you remember in the first season, they go to a strip club and, and they have to like try to pick up a stripper in the strip club. Do you remember that? It was like the second to last episode. That was my strip club. That was my strip club.
Really?
And I'm texting the GM, John Welsh. And I'm like, dude, are you kidding me? What happened? He's explaining to me what happened. I was like, oh my God, that's the craziest thing ever. Right. I wasn't there. I was a second lieutenant in the Air Force at the time when that
show. Were you aware of the show when that was happening and that whole
when that show was happening, I was deployed overseas. So like, I was deployed. Was I deployed? I can't remember. I was watching it while I was in the military. But anyway, so that happens. And the thing is 4 years, a couple things. First off, college let me know, and working in a nightclub let me know some of the frailties of the flaws that I had as far as networking were concerned. I talked too much. I was too loud. I would try to prove myself too much. When you're tall and you play the tall guy game, some guy comes around who's taller. When you're good looking and you play the good looking guy game, some guy comes around who's more good looking, right? When you play the status game, Elon Musk walks in the room. You're fucked, right? So like these are different types of games people play as far as networking and status are concerned. And working in a nightclub, I saw so much of it. I also saw a lot of like abuse of anabolic steroids. That was another big thing in Texas. You can imagine. I think Texas and New Jersey probably have the worst steroid problems of any place in the country, but there were huge bar fights, stuff like that. And I'm just being thrown into this thing where I'm seeing how people interact with one another. The most gorgeous girl at the strip club, like this girl, like, could have been like a legit model, and she's dating the biggest piece of shit I've ever met. Like the first time I see things like that in my mind, right? The guy she's dating is super jealous. He's jealous of me. He doesn't want her even coming near me, stuff like that. And I'm seeing these things for the first time. And I'm like, how did this retard, I'm sorry, I don't mean to say that word. You can blank that word out. I apologize. Anybody who has somebody who's a disability, how is this guy dating this woman? Like it's just mind blowing to me that this guy would get someone like that. And then I remember probably one of the biggest inflection points for me when it came to like understanding social hierarchies and networking was when I went on a date with the prettiest girl that was at the Yellow Rose. This is one of the strip clubs in Austin. I'm still friends with her now, Christina Pincus. And we made out, we went on like two dates. She told me years later, she was like, she thought I was really cute, but she's like super weirded out by me. And then a couple of weeks after we went on a couple of dates, she shows up to my bar with this other guy. And this guy looks, all I can tell him, he's like maybe 5-6 inches shorter than me, but he looks so sure of himself. Dude, I can't even express to you like how cocky and sure of himself this guy looked, right? And he was nice to me. And then maybe 4 weeks later, she gets hired at my bar. She's working as a bartender. And I remember she's about to faint. I pick her up. I put her on the counter. And remember, dude, at this point, I've been working at a strip club while I'm also I've been working at a strip club at the same time while I'm the door guy at this club, right, Robbie? And when that happens, I look at her and I'm like,
club door guy,
and I'm a door guy at the same time. I'm the door guy at a nightclub. And I look at her and I'm like, you're pregnant. Because you remember, I'm going to tell you guys, if you ever manage a strip club for 4 years, you can tell when women are pregnant very quickly, very quickly. You can tell when you're pregnant. Yeah, because There's certain very, very clear physiological signs when they're pregnant. And I looked at her, I'm like, you're pregnant. And she goes, what? I go, yeah, I'm pregnant. And I knew who the father was too, right? And so it was one of these weird situations where it's like
skin tone or just the way that like, well, what are the signs? I'm curious. Or is it just more like something you pick up?
Well, it's the glow of their skin, water retention. And then there's things you're going to look for like nausea, specific swelling and like external joints, like their ankles are obviously like one of the bigger giveaways, but there's just like there's a fullness to them. I don't know I don't know how to explain this, but there's like a fullness or a glow to them. They actually don't look bad. They look like almost like a little shinier, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm explaining this wrong. I know I'm explaining this incorrectly, but like I can tell because it's a difference, right? There's a hormonal imbalance that starts happening and their breasts start to swell. And then you also see it like in the ankles. You and I are not experts to talk about this. I don't think we're qualified to talk about this, but yes, I've called out at least 8 girls. I've told them when they were pregnant. Now, most of the time they already knew they were pregnant. But it's not the big old belly. I'm talking in the first trimester. Sure. I can tell because there's certain because I'm used to seeing them every day. So it was just one of these situations. So anyway, the point of the story wasn't that she was pregnant. The point of the story was that I went on a date with this girl and a couple of months later, she picks a super arrogant looking guy and he's gotten her pregnant. And like, I didn't even like get in a second date with her. I was doing something wrong. And it was very apparent to me. So that guy and me.
she, one thing you said she thought you were cute, but thought you were weird or something.
Yeah, I was saying like the Lord's Prayer when we would go eat burritos and shit. I was like so fucking loud too. Yeah, I was one of the reasons why I lift weights all the time. I was so insecure about my physique. I have always had these very muscular, fully fleshed out legs with these big old hips. I'm a Colombian man. And then I've always had these string bean arms. Well, back in my 20s, I did. Not anymore, but I had these like tiny strings. So I always felt disproportionate. I was so insecure about my physique. And I would wear weird clothes. I would wear like these super baggy t-shirts that didn't make, like some of the stuff I wore just didn't look good. And I didn't know because I didn't have any female friends. I didn't know, you know, what I was doing.
You're surrounded by other players, you know, football players. And yeah, obviously the bar is set very high for your.
Yeah.
Your
well, I mean, most of the time I'm in my uniform, right? I'm in my black t-shirt for work every day. And like, that's it. Like, that's all I'm wearing, you know? And so that there was that. And the guys, all the guys I worked with were like, they were at UTSA, University of Texas, at San Angelo, or was it San Angelo? I can't remember what city it was in. Wherever it used to be called Southwest Texas Teachers College, where Lyndon Baines Johnson went. San Marcos, UT San Marcos. So the bunch of the football players from San Marcos were there, and these guys were all roiding up like heavy, like Trenbolone, fucking Winstrol. These guys were like abusing steroids. I remember dudes with like fucking massive arms, like huge, and they were bouncers with me, and they wanted to get in fights every week. I mean, it was just I really don't talk about this time in my life very, very often. I just remember sweating a lot. I remember taking breaks and going sitting in the walk-in freezer because I was so fucking hot all the time. That's one of the reasons why I left Texas.
Yeah, I haven't spent a whole lot of time. Been to Austin a few times, but it's always been.
Yeah. So then what happens is the guy who shows up gets my friend pregnant. I become best friends with him and follow him around. Here's the thing, Robbie, this is also the same way. When I find business mentors, it's very similar. I try to take in the good and then leave out the bad. What I mean by that is this guy had, an extreme propensity for violence. I couldn't get in a fight in Austin for 4 or 5 years because every time a guy would even look at me funny, this guy would just knock him out. His testosterone was like naturally through the roof. And then I had another buddy who was one of my best friends, and he played nose guard at Baylor in Waco. And then he went to camp with the Philadelphia Eagles. He was the first guy I'd ever met that benched 550. He was 6 foot, 300 pounds. And he was trying to be a professional wrestler. And I would go around with this super violent little Mexican dude and this 300 pound huge black dude. And like, it would be the three of us going to clubs, and like, no one, it was so funny. It's like, no one would ever fuck with us. It was just like, we'd go out. At this point, because I was working at a strip club, I had started to go out with groups of girls. This was a new thing for me where a lot of girls from work would be like, oh, we want to go do this. And I'm like, well, I know the host, you know, I used to work at a nightclub. Why don't you guys come? So when a girl at the strip club would have a birthday, I would get her and all her girlfriends together, and we'd walk. Remember, you don't drive in Austin at Sixth Street, you walk. We'd walk around Sixth Street and I'd take the girls to a club. So it'd be me and these two fucking like troglodyte brutes that I was with all the time. And then I'd have a bunch of girls with me and we'd go to clubs. And this was the first time where I noticed it was like, nobody gives a shit about my status. I have a bunch of girls. That's my status.
Right.
It was the first time I'd ever seen something like that. Right. And so we did that, you know, did that for a while. And then when I worked at the strip club, there was another thing that changed for me was that because I was around really attractive women all the time, the women that I dated were more attractive. Now that sounds kind of obvious to some people, but it's like one of these situations where like, if you don't understand, if you're a guy with a status of 5 and you live in like Des Moines, Iowa, you're going to receive a status of a 3. Because Des Moines doesn't have a lot of status there. If you go to Dallas and you have a 5, you're going to be a 5. But if you come to Las Vegas and you have a status of a 5, you're going to end up like interacting and dating with 8, 9, or 10. It's because of the logistics. If you ended up being like, just like, let's say you were an assistant that worked at the Playboy Mansion, the reality is you're probably going to date more attractive women. I know it's hard. This is a very difficult thing. This is, I don't mean to make this interview about pickup, but this is one of the three main things that pickup gets wrong is the logistics. They don't emphasize it nearly enough. Logistics needs to be emphasized 100, two orders of magnitude more than it's emphasized. Really, like logistic. I know a guy who all he does is give out wristbands. He doesn't work there anymore. He works at a different club. But he was the guy who was giving out the artist wristbands at Excess. You know, all the jokes about the artist wristbands. This guy had sex with the most beautiful women I've ever seen in my entire life. He was
holding the keys.
All he did was give out the artist wristbands to at Access. And like, I saw like the roster of women that, because the women would tell me that this guy had slept with was like, I'm talking Derek Jeter level, like incredible. He wasn't rich. He wasn't famous. All he did was when you wanted to go out and have a good time, he was the one who gave you access. And he was always in the middle of this incredible logistical group. So that's the first thing. Like, one of the main things that pickup gets wrong is that logistics for pickup is kind of a thing. It's like, you can just, here's some techniques while you live in your mom's basement. And whereas with my program, number one is you can't live in your mom's basement. Got to get out of your mom's basement. Right. Makes sense. So legit, that was one of the main lessons I learned. Logistics is not taught sternly enough. And like the earlier lesson was, hey, the world isn't the way that Disney or my pastor or my mom was telling me it is, right? The pretty girl doesn't date you because you're nice to her. Right. How do you learn that? You learn that working in a strip club, seeing the pretty girls date, like, and obviously strip club is not, it's not
getting knocked up.
Yeah. Strip club is not a microcosm for life. Please understand, guys. I'm not trying to say strip club teaches you about the whole world. Strip club, however, is like, it's like evolutionary psychology on steroids. It's like the girls with the biggest boobs and the blondest hair going up against the guys who have the most money. Do you see what I'm saying? It's like the most vapid, violent sort of evolutionary contests go on in a strip club when you think about it. Right. So, you know, just learning those lessons. And then I remember 9/11 happened. And I was at the strip club when I saw 9/11 happen. And I remember like going home and I was watching a Dallas. This would have been in obviously September 2011. So I remember watching a replay of the Cowboys. I think I had to work during the game or something like that. And I recorded on VHS. We had VHSs back then, guys. I don't know if you remember what those are. And and I remember sitting on my face on my couch, and I made a lot of money that year in cash from the strip club. Good living. And I remember thinking, am I going to be a DJ at a strip club for the rest of my life? I have a degree, you know, and I studied physics, and what am I doing? Right. And so I got up, I had two fraternity brothers. One of them, he's passed away since, he's a major in the Marine Corps. He was an EA-6B navigator. And I had one who was a C-130 pilot, in the Navy. And then I was a KC-135, instructor navigator. And so I went originally to the Marine Corps. They didn't have any spots. So then I went to the Air Force recruiter at Dolby Mall. And then it took them a year and 4 months. They lost my medical records, which, by the way, since then I've helped other people join the military. I go to recruiters with them, and them losing your medical records, I'm starting to realize it's not a real thing. They're trying to see how serious you are about joining. Like you drive somewhere to take a physical, they lose your medical records and you have to go do it again. They're trying to see how badly you want to join the military. I'm starting to believe there's too many times where we lost your AFLQT results. That's happened too many times since I've tried to help other people get in the military. I'm starting to think that's just like a technique that recruiters use to see if you're serious, right?
Really? So they're turning people away quite often.
Yeah. I mean, well, after 9/11, this is a year after 9/11. So this is 2002. And at this point, you know, the recruiters are constantly turning people away. There's too many people who want to join, especially as an officer, especially as an Air Force officer, especially as an Air Force officer who flies in an airplane. Like, that's right. Obviously a super coveted position. So, and I didn't ask for that, by the way. I asked to be an intel officer, which ironically, at the end of my career, when I was deniffed, I couldn't fly anymore at the end of my career because of a medical condition. I went into intel. At the very end, I did some counterintelligence stuff. So I go from the strip club.
You kind of wanted to decide to join the military.
I just have an analytical mind. Like I said, I'm a quantitative analyst for a hedge fund. Now I shouldn't technically call it a hedge fund. We're not legally a hedge fund yet. We are a fund that takes a lot of risk with money. That's probably a better way to say it. And we have multiple investors, but I'm a quantitative analyst. So numbers make a lot of sense to me. And there was just like, there was no real challenge. Like, you don't, it's funny when you work at a gentleman's club or at a nightclub, there's no meritocracy unless you're a VIP host, then there is, but like, there's no meritocracy. You're just like waiting for the next guy to die or get married or to leave the strip club. Do you understand?
Yeah.
You know how you end up being the Friday night DJ at a strip club? You just stay there until the other three guys die. No one ever leaves those jobs. And sure. In fact, I can tell you this also, like, had I been in a situation where I had been in Austin and I got a job at like one of the bigger strip clubs, and then somehow I got a nighttime gig, I probably would have never joined the military because I would have made too much money. you can make a lot of money with those gigs. Those girls tip a lot. I don't think it's like that now, but like it was one of these situations where the guys would tell me, I mean, dudes would be leaving with like 2-3K and they're DJs.
Wow.
Right. And working like at a strip club, like girls coming up and just, oh bro, like 4 or 5 nights a week. I mean, it was crazy. It was nuts, bro. Now it's not often. And I don't think there's many of them that do that anymore, but at the time that was like, you were making, you could make 2K a night. And as a DJ on a weeknight, it was like, but now for me, I was lucky to make 300, 400, you know, or 500 or something like that. So anyway, so I end up joining the military. It was just one of these things where in my mind, I've always had this thing where you just need to take action. And in the military is where I kind of started all the self-help stuff. I got on Friendster. I remember I got exposed to some of the stuff in the seduction community. I got exposed to a lot of stuff in the self-help community. I'd say from 02 to 08, I just got like, no, I'm sorry. So from 04 to 08, I just got really, really involved with it, because in the military, you know, when you're a flyer, you're studying or you have a lot of free time. I would spend a lot of my free time like reading, listening to audiobooks. That's where I got my obsession with audiobooks. It was probably 2006. And obviously if anybody done my program, you know, I highly encourage people to use hyperspeed audiobooks as a tool, like going on Audible at 1.7 speed, 2.0 speed. I feel like it's one of the most useful tools I have in my entire life, is that I can consume books at such a fast rate. And I take notes on them. In fact, I'll tell you, I read faster because I listen to audiobooks faster. I was the first person to get through Dan Bilzerian's book. He gave out early copies to several of his friends, and I got through it before anyone, which is why he gave me that interview. You'll notice like why he gave me the interview before he did. I did the interview before he did Nelk Boys and before he did Impulsive. Wait, was that true? I think that was the order. Yeah, I think I did mine first. That's essentially how that worked. So in the military, you know, I just really changed my focus a lot to where I want to become a, you know, really good military officer. And it was one of these weird situations where I lived in Austin or Atlanta, Georgia, and I would live in Warner Robins, Georgia, and I would drive to Atlanta every weekend. Then later I lived in Wichita and I would drive 6 hours every weekend to go out in Dallas, just to go to some clubs in Dallas. I couldn't, like, Oklahoma City wasn't good enough for me. Some people like Bricktown. I would go to Dallas and have a blast. And then I would drive back. And on the way there and back, that's 12 hours, bro. I would get through so many novels, everything by Ken Follett, everything by Tom Clancy. I was just burning through these novels back then. I remember that. And like a lot of people understand, like a lot of the foundation for what later became my podcast today came from those drives. It came from those long drives of just listening to those audiobooks. Intellect, mathematics, physics, biology, psychology have always been very fascinating to me. A lot of people,
it's confusing. That was all just to go out.
Yeah, just to go out, just to go see my friends, just to go out.
See, most guys, they would never even like consider that. They're like, oh, my city sucks. There's nothing to do here. And then they just kind of, you know, they use that as an excuse.
I would drive 6 hours every weekend just to be around prettier girls. That is correct. Yeah. And that's because that's what it meant to me. It's funny you mentioned that, because I've never thought about that until right now. It was not even a consideration of me like staying in Wichita. It's Wichita. What am I going to do in Wichita? I used to have a saying, there's 12 attractive women in Wichita and they're all married. Between the 12 women, they have 48 children. Like, that's it. Like, if you're attractive and you live in Wichita, you are wifed up and pregnant or you are gone. Right.
Yeah.
There's a story I tell. It's called the story of Jojo Von Safi. Jojo and I happened to live in Wichita at the same time. She was 19 and I was 26, 27. We went on one friend date. It wasn't really a date. We went to Chicago Pizza Kitchen or whatever. And we connected there and we would just bump into each other now and then. You know, we just weren't each other's type. And we were, you know, just good friends, whatever. Jojo ends up, you know, getting a massive glow up, get plastic surgery, huge boob job, moves to Los Angeles, or like, and she's working at Hooters in Wichita. And she gets discovered on Instagram. This is 2012. She's getting discovered on Instagram. She's the first girl I've ever seen. She's at 10 million followers now. She's the first girl I've ever seen to get to 1 million followers. And it's just a great example of, this would have been the really hot girl that you pick up from the Hooters in Wichita when you're an injury attorney that lives in Wichita. But she's not with you anymore. She's at Bilzerian's house with me now. Social media sucked. For all of those who are watching this and you live in shitty places that don't have good logistics, just to let you know that that girl who was destined for you, she is with me at the Playboy Mansion or the Maxim party now. She's not waiting around for you. because Instagram gives her access to better and better, better things. I'm hosting a bikini competition for $130,000. We're literally paying for girls' hotel rooms. You were supposed to go on a date with that girl Friday night. She's coming to my bikini competition, competing for $4,000 for, and then for the finals for $20,000 for prize. Like the logistical, one of the things that social media did is that the guys who had the advantage have a bigger advantage now. The guys who are good looking with the Lambo and the Patek watch or have a really good social circle or a lot of pre-selection, their advantage over the other guys is accentuated, which is why in my program, the very first step, we have a t-shirt that says Men of Action, fix your fucking Instagram. There's no like times, "Oh, Michael, you know, while I'm fixing my Instagram, shut the fuck up. I don't want to hear about any of that." You will fix your fucking Instagram first. You not having an Instagram is like being an attorney without an office. Okay. And it's so hard. So I said the second most important thing was the logistics. The third thing, most important thing that Pickup got wrong was they're incredible, incredibly like monolithic, slow adoption of social media. And what I felt was, because I know a lot of self-help coaches and a lot of these guys were Pickup coaches, and I would talk to them.
It's not
even that they were phonies. It's like they didn't want to expose their clients. They knew their clients were weirdos and they didn't want them on social media because social media would just show what weirdos their clients were. And my whole thing is we have to fix the root. We have to get down in the root and fix all of it. The way you dress, the way you talk, like everything has to be changed. And that's scary for a lot of people because they're still in their mom's basement reading lay reports from fucking Vince Kelvin. Like they don't, like they're so stuck back in that time, in that place. And it makes so much more sense to them logically that like what I do is confusing and even upsetting. It's really interesting when I see guys get very angry when they see pictures of me with like 100 girls. They get very, very upset about it. Like, no, there's obviously some excuse. One of the main ones I get frequently is Michael pays these girls. I have never paid a single girl to be in a photograph with me ever. I've never paid a single girl. Listen to me. I've never paid a single girl to be in a photo with me ever. Not one time. Now, have I invited 70, 80 girls to go with me to the Maxim party? Yes. Did they show up with me? Yes. Did they take pictures with me? Yes. Did I invite 116 girls to go with me to Dan Bilzerian's Ignite party? Yes. Did they walk in with me? Yes. Did I walk into the club, walk into the house with 40 girls with me? Yes, I did. Did I pay any of them? No, I did not pay any of them. I used social circle in order to put myself in these, like we talked about before, incredible logistical situations. So at some point, this is what happens. 07 and 08, I go to Vegas for the first time. 07, I think I go there for the NBA All-Star game. I believe that's what it was. And in 08, I went there. Two of my friends, it was like this lesbian couple. This was like the first time I really
I was there for that weekend. That was like the craziest weekend ever in Vegas.
Yeah, there was lots of shootings and it was crazy. But here's what happened, right? The weekends were like hard to get in, $50 to get into a club, whatever. And you're just like, hey, watch out. Sorry, this is my good buddy here, my assistant Kobe. He's got to get off the table. So the weekends were just like, you're just drowned with like dudes everywhere, girls and the VIP, like you understand nightclubs are set up like this. Like one of the things I don't sell you Vegas. I teach you Vegas. Nightclubs are set up like this. When you are a normal dude who is not spending some thousand of dollars for a table, the nightclub is built to shit on you. It is built specifically
like take your money.
Like literally the sight lines in the nightclub are made to make you feel like a loser cuck. That's the way the nightclub is built. Not only that, there are guys in nightclubs in Vegas called girl guys. Their job, they're always super good looking dudes in perfectly tailored suits. They're like the younger guys in the group. And their job is to walk around, find super hot girls, the girls that you were going to go do your cold approach with. And they pull them like, hey, do you want to come on stage? Hey, do you want to come to this big spender's table? And the girls always say yes. And they spend the whole night just dancing at some guy's table, drinking up all their alcohol. So that guy has to order more alcohol and the club makes more money. Nightclubs are built so that normal chodes look like shit and feel like shit. Always remember that. Okay. That's why it's very important that you understand social circle, because if you don't, you're always behind the eight ball. You're always the creepy guy waiting by the bathroom for the girl to come out so you can talk to her. Right. Yep. Instead of me, I'm on stage at every club. Have you guys seen, I don't know if you've ever seen on my social media, I make these really ridiculous posts whenever I'm on stage, I write fuck, I'm on stage again. Every night I'm on stage. Why can't I ever just hang out in the GA with the on the dance floor? And then like the same night I'm on stage and like I'm at EDC, like I'm on the sky deck. I'm like, fuck, why am I up here with Paris Hilton? I just want to be in the crowd. Like, you know what I'm saying? I make these funny comments. But again, it's not because I'm famous and it's not because I spend money. It's because my social alignments. And again, this is what I teach in the Men of Action Mentoring Program. So the two trips to Vegas, I just remember being here and like accidentally meeting. Here's what did it for me, Robbie. It wasn't Friday and Saturday. And I tell these guys all the time, your social circle is not ever going to be built on Friday and Saturday night. Your social circle is going to be built on Sunday through Thursday night. Your social circle is going to be built on industry nights. It's going to be built on social media and it's going to be built on industry nights. And it's going to be built on the day pools on Saturday and Sunday daytime, right? That's when your social circle is going to be built. Your social circle is going to be built with charity events and galas. Your social circle is going to be built when you take a big group of people to go axe throwing or to go to an amusement park or something like that, or to come over and play Never Have I Ever while everyone's drinking tequila. We have a thing here in Vegas. It's called Tequila and Cats. I rescue cats in my apartments. Like I have a bunch of cats. The girls come over, they drink tequila. We play Never Have I Ever. You have a view of the city from panorama towers and you know, there's cats everywhere. Right. That's just a thing that it's just a social circle thing that I do. You might not like cats. You might have a different social circle thing.
That's great. It's like a shtick, you know, not a shtick, but it's.
No, it's definitely a shtick. Fun. It's a MacGuffin. The term you're looking for, Robbie, is a MacGuffin from. So you should look this up. So Alfred Hitchcock, he had this thing where one of his stories, there was a character named MacGuffin and hit the MacGuffin character. The only point of that character was to move the plot forward. He didn't actually have any lines or do anything. If you guys remember from Pulp Fiction, I don't know how old you guys are, one of the 10 greatest movies ever made. Pulp Fiction, there was this briefcase that all the main characters are killing each other for. And in the briefcase, they never tell you what's in the briefcase, even to the end of the movie. The point of it, that briefcase was to move the plot forward. That's called a MacGuffin. So my MacGuffin, let's talk, what are my MacGuffins? Charity events, right? Which is something very deeply important to me, especially charity events to do with disabled veterans, because I'm a disabled veteran. Charity events to do with human trafficking, because I have several female friends who have been trafficked before, physically abused. Things like domestic abuse are very important to me. And then animal rescue. Those are heavy, heavy. These are things that could make me well up and cry, like the real, real emotional things. This is what I do. I was like, what if I take all these beautiful women and we transmute all that energy that they get on their social media into raising money for those charities? If you want to say like, what is the main ethos of my social circle? It's that I use attractive women to raise money for charity. Okay. That would be the main thing. Your MacGuffin may be a different MacGuffin than mine. You may be a photographer, or you may, there's a personal injury attorney here. It's a good buddy of mine. And this guy, he likes to throw these dinners with his staff. And he likes to invite his staff is like half, mostly women, but then he invites a ton of like gorgeous models. So he'll have like 50, 60 girls at dinner. And then it's like, you know, it's 10 or 15 male employees. And it's just a blast. We're just having a blast on stage and everyone's having a great time. And he's using it and he's posting all this stuff on social media. And he's just this man about town. And I like, you trust him because you see his face more, you know? So it's one of those situations like that. One of the things I want to also make sure, Robbie, that people understand, that your audience understand, is that status is status is status. Okay. So I don't like the idea, or other people can do this, but I don't believe in a dating status and a business status. I don't think they're separate. Let me ask you a question, Robbie. President Clinton's highest approval rating during his administration was when?
Well, I'm guessing if it's some sort of trick question, so right around the time he was impeached?
It was right after he got his penis sucked by his fucking assistant, by his intern. Okay. Yeah. The world found out that he got a blowjob from his
this is when he admitted to lying.
Yes, this is after the impeachment. The highest approval rate of rating. Okay. So what does that in what does that let you know?
It felt like he was human.
Well, it's not, it's just that it's just remember the two types of status? They're not, they're the same status. Here, let's just do another one. Okay. Yep. Imagine this crazy scenario. A man is running for president. Okay. A wealthy man is running for president. And while he's president, he fucks a porn star while his wife is pregnant, then makes her sign an NDA about it. And then he gets elected to be president. Could you imagine anything like that happening? That did happen. Okay.
Yep.
You guys are worried about what you post on social media, but your president fucked a porn star and still got elected.
Yep.
Right. What does that tell you? Again, here, ready? Let me use it. Some of you, or maybe it's making sense to you. Some of it might not be. Okay. Let me ask you something, Robbie. Who I, like I said, I'm a quantitative analyst. I have a minor in astrophysics, right? But technically, I don't have a minor in astrophysics. The business school at UT Austin would not allow me to have a minor outside the business school, but I have the hours for it. Let's say you and I wanted to get in front of some venture capitalists. Okay. Let's just say for this example, I have my degree and I'm a former US military officer and I work at this hedge fund. And let's say you also have a degree in finance and you formerly worked at a hedge fund. Let's say we wanted to get in front of venture capitalists. Who would be able to get in front of venture capitalists first? You and me working as a team or Jake Paul?
Jake Paul.
You see, you didn't even hesitate. You know the answer to that. Jake Paul makes funny videos that have nothing to do with finance. And yet his status would allow him to get in front of more venture capitalists in front of us. Got it? Make sense? Okay. Look, now let's do another thing, right? You and I spent our entire lives just like fucking fake Patek watches and Lambos. And we build up our social media and we do all this shit to like try to attract women. You see it all the time. Tinder swindler type of shit. Okay. You and me just work our asses off to just try to be just a honeypot as many women as possible. Okay. Who can get more attractive women, us or Elon Musk?
Elon Musk.
It's not even close, right? Elon, I know women that would literally like cut off their left foot to date Elon Musk.
So let's
go by this one more time. The guy who makes the funny YouTube videos can get around more venture capitalists than us. And the tech billionaire can get around more attractive women than us. What does that tell you about these two types of status? They're the same status. Do you understand, Robbie? This is a hard thing for people to understand because they'll look at my social media. I don't know if I can screen share here, but they'll look at my social media and they'll be like, no, Michael, I can't post stuff like what you post. Like, I can't get away with that. That's way too lascivious for me. And I'm like, you know, man, I understand what you're saying, but like, I think you're confused about what it is that happens for me. Right. So just again, like if we go to my social media here,
You brought this up because I can't tell you how many times I tell my clients that have no Instagram, that are worried about their Instagram, or I don't want to post my Instagram because I'm a banker and someone might see it and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, man, come on. And please go on.
Okay. Again, so this is a photo I took before I started managing at a hedge fund and my boss has seen it. In fact, my boss is actually, let me tell you what else is happening. My boss and I we're trying to start a woman-led fund, meaning the fund manager is going to be female. All the traders are going to be female. We want a completely woman-led fund. There's some people, listen, I'm not trying to virtue signal, but there's some people who are actually interested in that. So that was something we're going to do. And they wanted me to recruit. So I go on my Instagram and I say, I need girls that actually have degrees in STEM, science, technology, engineering, or mathematics, or specifically in finance. And I had so many girls apply to work for us. It was incredible. Why? Because of my network. Okay. You guys understand? Because of like these photos, this was my birthday party. The girls are all wearing orange because I went to UT Austin. They all wore orange for me. By the way, I didn't ask them to. They just surprised me. And you see the girls, some of the girls are wearing cat ears. It's because I rescue cats. They did all this for me. I didn't plan any of this, Robbie. There were 56 girls that showed up to my birthday. I invited four girls and they invited all the rest for me, which is the number one thing pickup gets wrong. Do you know what that one is, Robbie? What's the number one thing pickups get wrong? It's right here in this photo.
You want girls, have girls.
You want female friends. That whole thing about getting friend zone is a complete motherfucking lie. Put this on the front of your YouTube clip. All the shit about you can't be friends with females is 180 degrees from the truth. A complete lie.
I do have
lie.
One caveat about that. I'm interested to get your opinion on that. So one thing that guys will tell me, and this is something I experienced way back when, I had a girlfriend who I struck out with. I was in the friend zone with her. She was hot.
Okay. No, listen, hold on. What you're talking about is not what I just said. You struck out and now she put you in the friend zone.
This is my point, right? So guys think, oh, I'm going to strike out with this hot girl and then I'm going to friend zone her and then I'm going to bang her hot friends. And it's like, that's never going to happen because if you're not good enough for her, you're not good enough for her friends.
Right.
And what you're talking about is girls you are friends with who you probably could bang. Other girls know you could bang them and therefore you're good enough for them and that'll just grow.
So it's not even that. It's like, however, so it's more even a function of this, right? So like so you have to understand, hypergamy is a real thing, right? It's one of the most real, it's super real. So now it's a situation where like, she might not be good enough for me. So I happen to know the three guys that these three girls are dating. So I would never try to hit on the three of them. However, the two on the right, came on my podcast, and I got a ton of new viewers and new subscribers because of that, because they're my teammates. And then when they had their podcast, then I posted their stuff. So we're teammates. We help grow each other's podcast. We help grow each other's business. You with me so far, Robbie? Right?
Yep.
And I know them. They're my friends. So they come to my charity events and help me raise money for charity. All right. But here's what happens. Because I'm in this photo, there's a psychological effect that this is the level to which I am worthy when other girls see it. And it's not a logical, there's no logic, by the way, to men as well. There's no logical explanation to it, right? Like the girl that I'm dating is in one of these photos, but you don't know which girl and you don't know which photo. That's another thing I do. I do not make it like evident that I'm just here with one girl. But here's the other thing is compliance. This is where a lot of guys get wrong. The thing that makes this photo work or creates pre-selection isn't all the girls. It's that we're all smiling together and it's that right there. See the hand on my shoulder? It's compliance. This is not the creepy guy bothering me going to the bathroom. Does that make sense? So the number one thing that, there's three things that pickup gets wrong. The number one thing gets wrong. This was my birthday 2 years ago. The number one thing that pickup gets wrong is this idea that you can't be friends with women. Okay. If you like a girl and you get shot down and she puts you in the friend zone, you don't fucking talk to me. That is not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is actively meeting all these girls, treating them all exactly the same, be willing to help them with their podcast, their modeling shit, helping them introduce them to new photographers. Sometimes I introduce them to their boyfriends. Almost all my friends meet their boyfriends and girlfriends through me, guys and girlfriends. Okay. Helping them with everything, being completely willing to create win-win situations for everyone and treating your guy friends and your girlfriends exactly the same. When I see my guy friends, you know what I say? What up, motherfucker? Let's go hoop. You know what I say when I see my female friends, Robbie? I look at them. I go, what up, motherfucker? Let's go hoop.
Yeah.
That's when I see my guy friends and they get really swole, I'm like, yo, bitch, do you even lift? When I see my female friends, you know what I say to them? Yo, bro, do you even lift? The same tonality. I treat them exactly the same. We are fucking teammates, Robbie. They're not my opponent. They're not my enemy. They are my teammate. And yes, so the three things that come along with having a ton of female friends, number one, the main thing that most guys are gonna be interested in is pre-selection. It's the strongest attraction trigger. If you listen, there's a Bilzerian interview. I can't remember which one it is, but he says, being rich is very helpful for getting women. Being famous is 10 times more helpful than that, but nothing beats walking to a club with 20 women. When you walk into a club with 20 women, like everyone stares at you and they wanna know who you are. Like, and it's I can't, when, that my birthday party, when I walked in with 22 girls, there was another 20 girls that came up to my thing and they kept introducing themselves to me. They all wanted to know who I was. And then of course, Bilzerian came to my birthday party and he sat there and he drank and hung out with us the whole night. Some guy threw a water bottle at us from the balcony. Dan picks up this fucking glass of water and throws it up into the set. It was crazy, dude. And his security, the whole thing was just nuts.
If you're a dude listening to this and, you know, let's say you're at a pretty low level, right?
Yes.
What sort of advice could you give that guy who he's not even, I mean, let's say he's getting shot down by hot girls and he's not even able really to be their friends. Maybe he doesn't really have enough to offer them.
Yeah, that's not a thing. If he's getting shot down by hot girls, he's doing game. This is real confusing for a lot of guys, Robbie, because I had this with one of my clients 2 days ago. He was trying to game a hot girl to being his friend. Bro, stop. I'm not trying to game. You know what I do in front of my super hot female friends? I fart in front of them all the time. I don't give a fuck. I will sit in my boxers watching basketball, be like, what up, motherfucker? What are we doing? Yeah, sit down. And they're like, my boyfriend did this. Well, really? For real? When did you figure out he was gay? Oh, my bad. I'm sorry. You didn't know. My bad. You know, I'm just teasing them back and forth. We're in a locker room talking like shit to each other. That is the reality. That is the reality that I have with my friends. I've always said this before, dude. The greatest thing in the world that could ever happen to me is for every PUA in the whole world to come attack me at the same time. You don't want to know why? Because then they would see this. And then you got to. If you're in pickup and you tell me that you can't have female friends, you have to explain away photos like this. And it's too hard to do it. My existence is antithetical to their theory. And it's very upsetting to a lot of those guys whenever I do this stuff. And then I get the excuses about, no, Michael, you paid these girls to be here. Or no, Michael, those girls are too ready. Here's how you know when a guy's really bad with women. Ready, Robbie? Here's the word, plastic. When you hear guys saying those girls are too plastic, that's when you know he's bad with women. That's when you know that whenever I hear plastic, she's too plastic, that, or she's too fake, or I wouldn't want girls like that because they're all whores. That's a way for a dude to express he's terrible with women because they're too cognitive dissonant. They're too plat. Here's Swimsuit USA. Hardly any of these girls have any plastic surgery done. They're all just super young. And I'm the host of this also. Again, a pickup coach would never be standing in the middle of this photo. By definition, he wouldn't. By definition, he couldn't. This is why I don't teach a dating course. I teach a status course. Okay. Sure. And remember what I said before, status is status is status, right? That's a different thing. And then the compliance and friendship, like these two girls right here are good friends of mine. These two girls behind me are good friends of mine. They're still friends of mine. I can tell you all kinds of stuff about them. They enjoy taking pictures. Well, partially girls love taking pictures with me because I edit the photo. I edit the shit out of my photos. I recommend all you guys learn how to use FaceApp. Girls love, again, these four girls
are doing it.
Yeah, these girls, these four girls have, like, look at this. These four girls all have master's degrees. That's why I took this photo. They're FHM, like this girl's an FHM cover model. This girl's an FHM cover model, but they have master's degrees. This girl right here she's a therapist. She's a marriage therapist. This girl right here has a master's in education. I can't believe what it is. And this girl, she's a coder. She codes and I can't remember what company she works for now. And this girl's a social media marketing manager, right?
Yeah.
There's a depth to this, right? And for a lot of guys, they're just like, no, women are dumb. I don't know why you do this. Just like the whole point of my dating life is to trick women into sleeping with me. I want to continue to play World of Warcraft in my mom's basement. And then I need the techniques. I need the techniques that I'm going to learn from John Anthony Lifestyle so that I can go out and fucking manipulate these women into having sex with me. That's essentially what it is. Whereas my whole thing is, you know what I tell guys whenever they go through a breakup? If you want to talk, I'm getting way off course here. If you go through a breakup, you are not allowed to talk to your ex until you go on dates with six other women and you get a new personal record on the bench press. If you do those two things, you have my complete permission to talk to your ex. If you and your ex had a toxic breakup, you broke up with her, she broke up with you, and you just really want to call her, I encourage you to call her. Go ahead. But you have to go on dates with six other women first, and you need a personal, you got to videotape it too. If your bench press max was 285, I need to see 290. If you get a personal max on the bench press and you go on dates with six other girls, you have my permission to talk to your ex. You want to know something? Robbie, you're not even going to talk to your ex. You're not even going to give a shit. Not only that, when you go on the dates with the six other girls, your ex is going to be messaging you.
Of course, okay. Yeah.
Rule number three, abundance is always the answer.
Speaking of status, talk about the blue check mark on Instagram.
It's huge. Yeah, it's pretty big. But the problem is, I think it's starting to work against itself. What I mean by that is anytime I see a guy with 100K followers and a blue check mark and he sells Forex, I know he bought it. Right. And it's starting to hurt like a normal dude like me at 44,000 followers. Like I know this is gonna sound crazy. I kind of almost wish I had fewer followers. Because it kind of puts people on this weird notice and it almost makes people think that my followers are fake because it's so hard to get followers right now. Right. Yeah. But I mean, I started in 2012. All my followers are completely real, which I'm one of the very few people out here who can say that. Like I've never bought any followers. And then my engagement is real. So like that part is difficult, but like the amount of work I have to do, like my photos are magnificent compared to what most guys post. I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but they are like my photos get a lot of people's attention. And for me to get 2% engagement, I'm happy with that. Right. Other people, like you can see when a guy has 800 followers and he gets 2000 likes a post, he's paying for engagement and there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm telling you, with as far as the blue check mark is concerned, it will for a certain group of women. So this is one of the big differences between men and women. For men, we see a physical form and then we are attracted. All the genetic information that we need about a woman, we see immediately. We have our male version of hypergamy. What it would be called hyperandry would probably be the correct Greek term for that. Hyper man, right? Hypergamy, which would be hyper female. That would be a function of a woman needing all that information. So she can't really tell how much money you make unless you, that's why men wear the Patek watch and then go rent the Lambo to show wealth. Cause you remember the whole saying, why do you wear the expensive watch? Cause I can't drive the Lambo in the club. Right. By the way, have you seen that one club in Dubai where you can drive your Lamborghini into your, up to your table? Have you seen that? Like no, it's so like whoever made that club has a degree in psychology. I guarantee you whoever made that club it was so brilliant when I heard that idea. Like you drive your Lambo up to, like there's no dance floor. You drive your Lambo up to your fucking dance floor. It was so genius. I couldn't
even.
Whatever. Yeah. Well, listen, if you want to drive your fucking Hyundai, everyone gets to see your fucking Hyundai. You know what I'm saying?
That'd be a baller move, actually.
No, for sure. So like, no. it's one of those situations where like you, the Paddock watch, like she can't tell if he's bad in bed, right? Because for us as men, if a woman's attractive enough, like we don't really care if she's bad in bed as much as women care. Women are like, oh man, because it's much more of an investment for them to have sex with a new guy if he's bad in bed. I've heard women say this before. It's like, this is crazy. My friend Destiny, she told me this. She was like, I have sex on the first date because I'm afraid to fall in love with a guy who's bad in bed. Right. So she has sex on the first date because of it. It's kind of the opposite of what you think. Right.
Right.
It's really interesting. It's really interesting.
It's a shitty deal for girls because a lot of the time, you know, they'll have the opposite mentality. They'll go on 5, 6, 7, you know, whatever. They'll fall in love with a guy. They'll have sex with them. They'll have a, you know, he'll be terrible in bed, tiny dick. And they're like, fuck, now I'm.
Here's the thing, Robbie. I can tell you'll be better with women in general because you actually looked at it from her standpoint. That if you were going to ask me, if I was going to say the one dynamic, the one stat that is the highest correlation between men who are good with women and men who aren't, men who are good with women can have female friends and have empathy for their situation. Men who cannot, and by the way, it doesn't mean that they're nice. Some of these guys are complete fucking assholes, but the men who can have empathy for the situation, those are the guys who I find to be extremely good with women. The ones who can't, those are the ones who end up being red pill cucks like that or incels. So that's what I see. Now, granted, if you're Justin Timberlake or you're super wealthy, don't listen to anything I'm saying. I tell my clients, if you have $1 billion, you don't need an Instagram. If you have won a Grammy or a Super Bowl or a World Cup, I excuse you for not having an Instagram. For the rest of you, you're going to have to fucking work.
Reminds me of the scene from Crazy Stupid Love where he's like, are you Steve Jobs? Do you own, you know, Apple computers, you can't wear fucking New Balance shoes.
Yeah. If you're Steve Jobs, you can wear New Balance. For the rest of you have to show some, there has to be some level of peacocking, right? And part of the reason why, like a lot of the guys, they throw the money in the air. For most men, when I see guys throwing the money in the air, make it rain at a strip club, it looks very try hard and stupid to me. I look at a guy and I see like a huge degree of insecurity. And then I try to see it from a woman's standpoint. And she's like, this man has so much wealth. He's willing to so many resources. He's just willing to throw it away. And that from an evolutionary standpoint is an attraction trigger. Here's where guys get confused. It's not the only attraction trigger. My point initially before was for men, we have what's called negative kurtosis or positive kurtosis when it comes to what we find attractive. We generally look for a hip to waist ratio, symmetrical faces and signs of youth, right? Some guys like big breasts, some like guys like small breasts, some guys like big butts, some like small butts, whatever. But for the most part, we're looking for signs of youth and symmetry and a hip to waist ratio for men. And this is ubiquitous amongst different cultures. Dr. David Buss did a 37 culture study and found this to be a ubiquitous feature for all men. And also a certain level of agreeableness amongst these women as well was also found to be attractive. Now, when we look at women, I know women right now, Robbie, if you got on that fucking Winstrol, shot that shit up, took some fucking Anavar, got, you know, started taking some fucking Mastrone and shooting up 500 milligrams of test every week, hitting the gym 7 days a week and just got swole as fuck. And then got tattoo sleeves and then maybe like a neck tattoo and like maybe some tattoos right under here. If that's all you did, I know some women who would have sex with you sight unseen, no questions asked. You don't have to say a fucking word. They would fuck you. I know a lot of, especially here in Vegas, I know a lot of women. If you just had that look, you'd get laid. No work whatsoever. Now, those girls are not, what they're looking for is a tribal chief, or like they're looking for like the prime warrior in the tribe. That's the evolutionary signal that they're seeing from the dude on the roids, the V-shaped torso and all that kind of stuff. For some girls, I know they don't want any tattoos. Any guy has one tattoo, they're completely turned off. I know one woman, she's very like, she has associated success and power with short, extremely loud Jewish men. These are her words, not mine. So she's very much attracted to short, loud Jewish men. That is all she's interested. If they're too tall, she's not interested. I know one woman, she's an adult actress, and she's very much attracted to confident men who are physically unattractive. She likes dad bods and men who are not, because she knows that attractive men, she's going to constantly have to compete with other women. And it's funny, she will literally go film scenes with 9 other dudes, right? Come back and she wants her man to be unattractive, sitting at home waiting for her. Right. Women have different attraction triggers.
I'm around 30.
This woman is 27, 28.
Okay.
She also, just to be clear, this woman's she's a porn star. She has hyper high testosterone. This woman, some women are just like that. Like her test is probably in the 200s, which for a woman is really high. This woman, she no body fat whatsoever, six pack abs, like ass hard as a fucking, you know, hard as a rock. It just depends, right? And then I know some women, they're only interested in funny. I know some women, although it's very, there's a lot of women who say they're sapiosexuals. They're not sapiosexuals. Like I know some women who are sapiosexuals who like, I only like smart guys and they're dating a male stripper. It's not, the sapiosexual thing is way overplayed. This sapiosexual is a thing women like to say they are, but they're not. Very few women are really sapiosexual. The sapiosexual women are the ones that are like dating professors at Harvard. Like it's very rare to find these women. Most women are like, they meet a man of high status and then imbue intelligence on the man when he doesn't deserve it. By the way, we as men are just as guilty, right? A woman gives you a nasty blowjob and then you start thinking she's trustworthy, which is kind of the opposite of what you should do, right? Like when women, when you have sex with women, you start, you guys have all had friends. They start having sex with some scandalous woman and you like, they start trusting the woman. They're like, yeah, I don't trust Sarah. I don't trust Angela. And then you catch them like fucking wifed up with her, you know, living in the house that she's moved into his place. You know what I'm saying? Just cause the voodoo clam, like he's got his fucking brain all turned around. That's one of the problems we have as Homo sapiens is that when we're having really good sex with somebody and we're very intimate with them, we start to believe them no matter what they're saying to us. And it becomes a very dangerous situation where we can get trapped, right? We see it all the time. Like, can you imagine? Like, think about how fucking crazy Amber Heard is. She shit on Johnny Depp's bed. She shit on his bed. Like there's severe neurological disorder going on there. And I'm not saying Johnny Depp doesn't have either, but like who didn't know Johnny Depp was an alcoholic? Raise your hand if you were like shocked that Johnny Depp likes to party, fuck women and do drugs. You didn't know that when you got in there, you knew that was going to happen. But with Amber Heard, like you get, like, you know what you're buying when you date Johnny Depp or fucking, Pamela Anderson's, Tommy Lee. Well, you know, when you're dating Tommy Lee, you're getting a certain amount of crazy, right? But like, you know, these women, they come in there and they have these disorders, but they're so attractive. We just don't give a fuck. Yeah, she's so pretty. We're just like, oh God, she's so pretty. I can fix this situation. I'll tolerate this. That's one of the weaknesses we have as men is that we will tolerate an unbelievable amounts of bullshit because we're getting vagina. And the way you counteract that is rule number three, which is abundance. Abundance is always the answer. Almost, unless you're a heroin addict, then abundance is not the answer. But other than that, abundance is the answer, right? One of the reasons why I moved.
Quick question. Did you ever go through, like when you were driving to from Wichita to wherever you're going, to Austin or Dallas, going out all the time, were you like chasing women, approaching women then before you kind of made the transition to understand status? Transition there?
Yeah. So one of the reasons why Bulzerian and I align so much is because I don't really chase women. I create situations to where like,
but did you ever in the past? Cause most
not
guys,
not really.
I think in his interview with, who's the famous guy who died, like the Larry King, he was saying he used to hit on every woman at his campus.
But he also mentions in his book that what happened was he saw that the fraternity parties, they would have these fraternity parties, and next thing he knew, he was in a shower with two girls he didn't even know, fucking two girls. Like that's the way it works.
Almost every guy who's kind of like lived this sort of lifestyle that you, me, Blazarian, this sort of thing, like most of them at some point or another, they tried the chasing girls thing, or they tried approaching, they got over that sort of like creepy zone where they're,
because your evolution, well, it's uncalibrated, right? When you're young, you don't know.
You have to learn to be calibrated, which requires getting rejected, not giving a fuck about that.
Right.
So that's kind of my question. Did you have that sort of period, or were you more of like a natural dude?
Maybe 13 or 14. I had that period. I probably had that period. I was like in love with every girl who paid any attention to me, but it was just like, I was lucky in that I received extreme rejection extremely early to where I understood like, here's where guys get wrong, right? Looking for mentors. We're arrogant as a species. We're hairless murder apes. We're very fucking arrogant. Yeah. It's very hard for us to learn our lesson. We have to experience extreme discomfort and pain in order to like learn a lesson. And for me, those lessons happened to me very early on. What you should do is if a guy takes your girl, instead of being mad at him, you need to study him. Yeah. But nobody wants to do that. Right. If a guy takes your girl, the world has given you an opportunity to find out what you were doing wrong. Find out the delta between him and you. And yes, if the delta is that you're 5'9" and he's 6'4", that's one you can't do anything about that. right? But if the delta is he's funnier than you, or the delta is, which usually is, his alignments are stronger than yours are, right? And he has more alpha characteristics, that's something you're going to have to work on. And the words you say in text game or day game or cold approach, those do not overcome those delta. Does that make sense? Like, those do not overcome. What overcomes it is a new PR in the bench press. What overcomes it is having six female friends that go out with you every Tuesday night for tacos and beer. That's what overcomes it. What overcomes it is pre-selection that you show on your IG story and your Instagram. What overcomes it is showing access to scarce resources on your Instagram. That's what overcomes that. My clients, like, I just can't hear, I'll just show you right now, you know, just to give you because this is another question I get all the time. They're like, Michael, yes, I understand that this works for you. Vincent Del Toro, I didn't know this motherfucker from Adam a couple years ago. I'm like, look at Vincent's life, bro. Like, look at this. We just taught him how to take different photos. Look at this, man. Like, if you have no empathy, for those of you who are sociopaths, I apologize. This is not going to work for you. Nothing I say is going to make any sense. For those of you who are not sociopaths, I want you to be a woman for a second and look at this photo and then look at the shit you're posting and then look at this. If you can't see this and be like, wow, yes, of course she'd rather hang out with him. Of course, this makes way more sense. Of course she, okay, what Michael's doing. Oh, I get it now. This makes way more sense. Of course, these girls would rather hang out with him. He's showing access to scarce resources. That makes way more sense. If you can't see that, my program is not for you, but also a lifestyle full of abundance is also not for you as well, right? You're one of the people who calls women plastic whenever you can't date them. So that's essentially what happened.
The guys who are listening or watching and they're like, oh, well, it's easy for Michael. He's got all these pictures with chicks. Here's a perfect example of a guy who doesn't have a lot of pictures with chicks, but he's got really high quality photos. Any girl who sees this profile is going to be way more interested than, you know, this the run of the mill shit profile you see most guys have.
This is one of my other favorite. This is my client. He's in green right there. He's vertically challenged a little bit. And this guy is dating super hot women all the time. Okay. Because he just does did not pay a single woman to be in this photo. He just creates amazing situations. For those of you who are like, yeah, Michael, he didn't sleep with all those women. I want you to ask yourself, like, in his situation, is he not doing the best he can do? Is he not, like, this motherfucker is Roberto Duran taking on Lennox Lewis. He's punching so high above his weight. It's ridiculous. These guys, my clients hit me up and they have these, like, they have these questions for me. Like, what do I do? Because the girls I'm dating are so mad about all the other girls I'm dating. These are the questions I get from them. They're like, fuck, dude, what do I do? It's like, hey, Michael, how do I do this? Because my ex-girlfriend wants to come to one of my photo shoots, but she's not hot enough. These are the questions I get from these guys. These are my clients. I'm not in any of these photos. Anybody notice? I'm in none of these photos. These are my clients doing this without me, without any of my help. They're doing this stuff. Now, with my instruction, yes, they're doing it. This is another buddy of my Raj, right? This is for those of you who are like, well, you know, I'm a brown man. I'm a minority. You know, I don't think the girls will like me. Dude, again, Raj went out there. He just did the shit that I told him. And the reactions he gets from women are just fucking incredible. Again, my buddy, John Lewis, this guy took over TikTok. He has, well, look at this video. He made this recap video for one of his events that he did. Let's see if this pulls up. I haven't even seen this. Again, guys, I want to express this to you. This is in New York City. I live in Las Vegas. These are my clients just listening to the words I say, following my directions. And this is the reality that they live in now because of this. This is not me. I don't do any intros for them. They did this all on their own because of very, very, very simple understanding of how social dynamics works. Not, unfortunately, there's a company called that, but they don't really understand how it works. How actual really real don't. Social dynamics works. this is how actual real social dynamics works. If you guys are interested in learning that, that's what my program is. I just showed you three of my clients. Guys, if you were to go to my website, you want to know what else you're going to find? It's so frustrating for people because they're so sure that there's some kind of trick or gimmick or some kind of shtick that I'm running. Because if you go to my website, by the way, you can watch this 7-minute intro video. You know what you see? This really, really fucking frustrates dudes when they have a problem. The guys who are like, no, Michael, I don't like your type of girls. No, they're plastic. Guys, once again, these are my, ready for it? These are my clients. This is not me doing any of this stuff. Look at these videos. These are not me. These are my clients. Guys, you want to know something? This is an Air Force officer, or this is a Marine Corps pilot who's in my program.
I know.
I've got a Harvard. I've got a Harvard professor who's in my program. I've got several guys who've become club promoters that are in my program. One more time, guys. You want to know one of the most annoying things about my website is that you have to go through 40 plus testimonials. You want to know one other thing that's really crazy? You know what's really annoying, Bobby, when you sell, Robbie, when you sell a program and you have to give away refunds? Not for me. I've never had a refund. Over 300 clients. And I've only been doing this for a year. This is my client who's in UK. Michael, I can't do this. The stuff you do doesn't work in Europe. Wait, what? Yeah, it looks like it does, man. Status is status. Exactly, man. This is one of my clients in New York. This guy, I would highly recommend all of you follow this guy on TikTok, John J. Lewis. Again, look at these guys. Again, we can just go forever. This is one of my clients, Musab. He's married and he lives in Miami. Like status is status. You guys have to understand, man. Shanka, my man Shanka lives in he gets paid to throw events, right? Because he just listened to what I said. Guys, we'll go forever. This is one of my buddies. Any of my guys are like, sometimes I have clients, African-American guys are like, yeah, man, white girls don't like me. Not this motherfucker. I don't want to hear excuses. I don't want to hear excuses that I'm Indian or Asian or black or short. None of those excuses work. Not if you're in my program. They just don't. I just have too many examples. And guys, again, I'm not trying to express to you that these guys are doing my program and getting laid. Obviously they are. That's not the point though. The point is they're doing my program and they can get any job they want. They're doing my program and they can create any business funnel they want. They're doing my job. And this is Justin. He had a fractured neck and then became like a huge promoter. I think he's in Cancun or Tulum this week with like a bunch of models. That's what he ended up doing again. Right. There's another Keegan. He uses his network. He's got a new job that he made. I have several clients. The thing is we can't really show it in video form or picture form, but several of my clients use my program to get new jobs. They use my program in order to square up their entire life, their LinkedIn and all this kind of stuff. I'm just going to be honest with you guys. Yes, I use the girls in order to bait you in. The program is about fixing your entire life. Your network is your net worth. Your network can get you anywhere. Your network can get you anything. If you don't believe what I just said, this isn't the program for you. But you're also fucking blind. Because I'm just going through testimonials. We aren't even watching the testimonials, guys. This guy right here, he builds foundations in New York City. That's what he does. Like these guys, all of them, they make more money now. Like again, this guy's a DJ in Austin. Like again, this is a program. Like it's funny because I have a bunch of other dating coaches that like join my program because they're like, yeah, I'm doing something wrong. I don't understand how what he's doing is so like devastatingly effective. This is my man here, dude. Guys, listen to me. 47-year-old grandfather. Okay. He's a nuclear scientist. He lives up in the Northeast. He lives in Eastern fucking Washington. Eastern Washington. Dude, the parties this guy throws in Eastern Washington, they're incredible. Do you see this? This guy's a 47-year-old grandfather. You see this? Like, dude, let's just go all day. Hey, no, Michael, this shit doesn't work in the Middle East. This is one of my guys from Tel Aviv, Israel. Let's keep going, guys. Listen, I'm not out of fucking testimonials. Let's go forever. Let's just keep going forever, guys. Well, there's dude, just nowhere.
I can't go forever, anything else you want to,
One last guy. This guy does credit repair. He uses my program to fix his credit repair business. Okay. You have no excuses. No, there is no, I didn't even finish. Well, hold on. Real quick thing, Robbie, before I forget, two things I want to finish. Number one, the three things that pickup gets wrong. Number one, not having the female friends. Why are female friends so important? They help calibrate you. They bring you massive amounts of pre-selection. They bring other women into your life and they get you access to any event you want. I get invited to the Playboy Mansion, the Ignite parties and the Maxim parties because I have so many female friends. They are my teammates, not my opponents. They're not putting me in the friend zone. I'm putting them in the friend zone. You with me? That's number one. Second thing pickup gets wrong is logistics. They don't really emphasize. I could go on my balcony and throw a football at the Aria. I'm going to be able to see the F1 race that they have here in Las Vegas. If you guys have a choice between the house out in the suburbs, all that extra land you can get so you can have a bunch of dogs or sharing a place, a flat right over the nightclubs with two other roommates, pick the second one every time. Logistics trumps everything. Okay. Right. And the third thing is the advent of social media. You have to fix your fucking Instagram. You guys are really, you don't understand. The advantage that a guy with a good Instagram had over you in 2015, it's 10X now. You don't have any chance against him. He is he's already dating your girl. You don't even, the girls that you love, one of the things you'll find, a lot of them are following me and a lot of my friends. If you're not on social media, you're so far behind, you don't even have it's like doing a bodybuilding competition when your body doesn't even produce testosterone. Like you have no chance whatsoever unless your social media is up to par. These are not difficult things to do because they've been done so many times in my program. They're so incredibly easy and replicatable. And that's another thing. When you join MOA, there's no creativity. We do not allow creativity. Until you finish the entire course, you do things exactly the way we say to do them. It changes your entire life. I just showed you a bunch of testimonials. We didn't even get halfway through the testimonials. You see that, it'll change your life. And then you come back and you're like, holy shit. Like, yes, now I understand. Once you get through the program, now you can apply a little bit of creativity. But until then, we stick to the main things. Status is status is status. Fix your Instagram. The six rules, right? It's rule number one, we don't listen to the words. Rule number two, evolutionary psychology explains all human behavior. We follow to the six rules. And then you adhere to the tenets of the program. The program is about 56 hours long. And then there's about 300 hours of Q&A that go along with it as well.
Cool, man. Well, it's been, awesome for having you come on and drop so much knowledge. Really appreciate the,
of course,
time in the interview.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love, hey man, when you post this, I would love if your viewers would tell me who they'd want to see me interview on the podcast. I know this is a dating thing for you. This is your show is, and I love that. It's great. I don't want to when you join my program or when you get involved in this type of your life, I don't want you to only focus on dating. I don't think it's healthy for any of you to do that. There has to be dating mixed in with the weight room. There has to be. There has to be dating mixed in with the book club, with the reading list. There has to be dating, and it has to be mixed in with your ability to break rapport, be funny, have charisma, and get people to qualify to you. There has to be dating.
I think the guys, I'm glad you said that. Cause yeah, this show is lifestyle. It's all that. So there's a, anyone listening, if they've been listening for a long time, they understand that. And that's a really important reminder because you can't expect to date high quality women if that's the only thing you're fucking doing. You're just another PUA idiot. So
Robbie, are you coming to my bikini competition?
I'm in Turkey. So unfortunately,
I got the next 18 weeks. I have a bikini. I'm hosting the biggest bikini competition in the world. So when are you coming?
Well, I'm heading back. I'm actually engaged. So my fiance,
bring her. Did she want to be a judge? Would she like to judge the bikini competition?
Well, she was in Miss Ukraine, so she would probably be
perfect. Let's do it. There's a bunch. The girl, you saw my guest this week. She's the girl who does the model manager for Dan Bilzerian. She's from Ukraine.
Nice.
I don't know if you saw that, Miss Masha Diduk. She's actually Ukrainian, but yeah, dude. I would love, by the way, anyone who would like to come to any one of my events or any one of the bikini competitions this summer, I'm hosting a Playboy. Playboy's sponsoring my bikini competition. Again, how do I do this? How is it that I'm able to get 200 girls to show up? Am I gaming them? Am I sleeping with all of them, Robbie? No. Teammates. If you think that your life is better
from, we get back from, from Europe, we'd love to check it out. It'd be fun.
Yeah. Anytime you're out here. And then the other one is, if you guys want to come out to Babes in Toyland or any of the other events that I do, I would highly recommend those two. Those are open to you guys if you guys are interested in doing it. Those things are all really great. I was going to show you the last bikini competition I did. But yeah, man, the other thing is I have a bunch of huge influencers coming out. They're going to be the judges for my competitions. And then listen, dude, I get a lot of the stuff that I do is super overwhelming, but I'm telling you guys, you just saw all of those videos of the other testimonials for people that I was working with. But yeah, this is the last bikini competition I threw just before I did this one. I brought 54 girls. I had 12 days to put 54 girls in this competition, and then I ended up hosting it. This, what I'm telling you, isn't theoretical. This is not the Men of Theory course. There is no, there's not the Men of Dithering. It's not the Men of Blathering. It's not the Men of Theory. It's not the Men of Trauma Release. Okay. This is the Men of Fucking Action course. I don't talk about it. I be about it. I teach you a course on social networking the same week that Bilzerian's at my birthday party. I teach you a course on how to make female friends the same time that my female friends that are huge models come on my podcast. I teach you a course on how to throw events the same week that I throw the biggest bikini competition in the world. We don't talk about it. We be about it. A lot of guys do not like this level of intensity, and I understand that. But if you need, if it's a life or death situation, this is the lifestyle you want, like you would be willing to kill for it, then this is the right program for you. If this is something, you know, kind of that you want to do, and by the way, forget the women. You want the, you need, you want to meet venture capitalists. You want to network with a high, high, high net worth individuals. If you want to do that, this is the course for you for that. Like one of the things is a lot of people get caught up in the girls. This is not a program about girls. This is just the girls are harder to get their attention of. If you can get these girls' attention, I'm telling you, getting the fucking sponsors for your program, those things are much easier than to get Anna Hublinski or fucking Peyton or this girl, Charisse. It's much harder to get their attention than it is to get those guys' attention. So that's why I wanted to show you that.
If you get the guys, you get the girls, you know?
If you get the girls, you get everything. If you want really attractive women.
If you have amazing, like if I'm your buddy, right?
Yeah.
We're also buddies with Dan, right? You're not going to be my friend unless I'm bringing something to the table. And you roll with that crew of guys. The girls are just going to flow, of course, because no guy is in that crew without already having that status. So,
yeah. I also teach a little course on public speaking as well. Obviously, I host all these events myself. If you guys are interested in that, you have a little trouble like talking on camera or whatever. Talking on camera is it's 2020. You're on Zoom all the time. You have to learn to talk on camera. That's one of the things as far as everything, as far as dating, anything, you have to learn this skill set. And that's another thing we go over pretty in-depthly in my program.
That's a good piece. Important.
Yep. Yeah, but if this is something,
I'm gonna for everyone listening, there's links below, so check out Michael's shit. It's been I appreciate all the demonstrations and awesome content, man.
Yeah, for sure, man. We don't talk about it, we be about it.
Cool, brother. Well, thanks for coming on.
Hey, man, for sure. Robbie, yeah, let me know when you come in town. And for the rest of you guys who are interested, you just go to moamentoring.com, or just go to my Instagram. And there's a link to it up at the top for moamentoring.com.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.